Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Culp, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning. It is Thursday, November 12th.
November 12th. Yes.
Week 35? Isn't that where we are?
I think so. Calendar check. Paging our audience member who does the calendar check.
Yes.
It'll appear on the screen soon.
It will.
But yeah, but I think 35.
We think 35.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, welcome everybody.
Yeah.
We're glad that you're with us.
Yes.
Our COVID-19 Community Information Program from KSJE. And today we're going to be talking about a couple of things. One is real estate in the time of COVID.
I'm super excited about that.
Right. So we're going to get a guest from Keller Williams calling in. Barry Digman, who everyone probably knows.
Local. He's a local small-town hero.
Definitely.
That Barry Digman.
He is.
Yeah.
And so has a lot of connections.
Yes. He's like a historian, too. I don't know if you ever talked to him about that, but yeah.
I see his posts all the time, and I love them because, yeah, they're great. Anyways.
They're super helpful.
So he's going to be joining us in a moment, and then we're going to talk to our doctor guests. Who friends of the show.
Friends of the show.
Dr. Philpott, Dr. Greenberg, about this vaccine news that we talked about a little bit on Monday.
Yeah.
Give
us the inside scoop.
Yeah. So that's what's coming up.
Yeah.
So there you go. But we can get started by talking about some other stuff first, right?
Some other stuff. Let's do it.
Like testing and numbers and things along that line. There we go. Yes, Vicki Holmston is our calendar checker.
So she is.
She gets a shout out on Facebook today.
Yes.
Anyway, let's take a look at the testing numbers for the dates and times for next week and this week. Tomorrow, happening here at San Juan College. That's the screen in red, the line in red there. From 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Friday, November 13th. Then next week, again, we have a couple of sessions on Monday, November 16th, here at San Juan College, 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m., and again on Monday, 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m., Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m., Thursday, a new Thursday date. We haven't had a Thursday in a while, right? November 19th, 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. in the afternoon, and Friday, again here at San Juan College, from 8 a.m. until 9:30, and then next Saturday, the 21st at McGee Park, a new location.
Oh, that is a new location.
9 a.m. until 10:30 a.m. So those are the testing schedules for next week.
Good.
So and tomorrow. So there you go, everybody.
Have you ever been tested, Scott?
I have not yet been tested. I probably should.
Let's do it.
Yeah. What do you mean?
I don't know. I've been tested a few times. Yeah.
I know you
have.
Well.
It's like just pull up in line. You could be behind me.
I could.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's time for you to experience what the people experience, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Experiential journalism.
Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyway, so let's take a break and go to our first guest who's calling in at the moment. Good morning. You're on KSJE. Thank you so much for calling in. This should be the one and only Barry Digman.
It is indeed. Good morning, Scott. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to have you with us, Barry. Thank you for calling in from Keller Williams. We should mention that to everybody to talk a bit about how you sell real estate or buy real estate during a pandemic.
Well, yeah, we can talk about that. It's not as different right now. About the only thing that's different is that, we're being very, very careful about showing, our clients' homes.
Sure.
We're taking every precaution. We're gloved up. We're masked up. We are, sanitizing with Clorox wipes and all of that kind of stuff, so that's a big difference right now in real estate. As far as sales and everything, you guys want to know about that?
Yes.
We do want to know about that. Well, I know that you know all about it, and that's why you're here, and you share that a lot of times, I know, on Facebook and social media. So I think folks would be interested to learn about the San Juan County real estate market. How are we doing?
Well, I am impressed, honestly. You would think you know, given our economic issues here in the San Juan Basin and COVID and all of those other things, that it would be a train wreck. And it's not. It is not as bad as people might think. Let me just tell you what's happened here in the last, for example, the last 30 days, okay? You know, we keep pretty close statistics on sales, of course. So total active, you know, and I'm just talking the period, the 30-day period this year compared to last year, you know, down there, those are down about a third, okay? And the new listings, you know, those are the market, those are the homes that have come on the market within that period. They're flat. They're about the same as they were. The number under contract, those have dropped considerably. They're down about 40% for that 30-day period there. But the number sold, okay, and those are the ones where somebody walked away from the closing table with a shiny new set of keys, those are up 40% compared to last year. To me, that's remarkable. And, you know, the sold volume is up 46% for that period, and the average sales price is up. So, you know, overall, those numbers tell me this is a decent market for buyers and for sellers. I'm glad to see it right now.
Right. Well, and I was just going to ask you, Barry Digman, if this is a seller's market or a buyer's market, can it be both?
Really, there's advantages to both. The interest rates are just so low right now. Let's just unpack that for just a second. For example, you know, if you were, say you've got a $200,000 mortgage, okay, and you guys remember, you know, 5% used to be a pretty sweet interest rate, right? And, you know, a 30-year fixed mortgage at 5%, that's $1,074 a month. Call it $1,000 a month plus, okay? At 3%, which is where we are right now, you're looking at around $850 a month. That's a 20% reduction. So for buyers, it's really nice, okay? You can afford more home for the same monthly dollar, and that's a good thing. For sellers, you know, inventory right now is just really low. It leans toward a seller's market in that respect, Scott. Not as much inventory. In fact, we're probably half of what we were at this time last year. There's only 347 homes on the market in San Juan County right now. That's the whole county. So, yeah.
Yeah, that is. I'm thoroughly surprised actually by this news, because we hear a lot of comparisons to the Great Recession right now when it comes to how we're doing economically. But of course, the Great Recession had a lot to do with home buying, so it's a little different this time. Scott and I talked on Monday about the statistic of 14 million Americans now deciding to move because their work has gone online, and I know that you've been really passionate about trying to get folks to move to this area because of this new changing wave of internet work situations. So maybe you could talk a bit about your role in advocating for that.
Well, I belong to a kind of a subcommittee with the Farmington Chamber of Commerce, and it's called Retire Northwest New Mexico. And what we're trying to do is get folks, you know, who are, you know, they spent their careers in, you know, a community somewhere else, big city, and now they're retired and they are looking for an active outdoor lifestyle. And what better place than Farmington, New Mexico for that? So that's what that's about, is, you know, we're advertising, we're advocating, and we want to attract those retirees to the Four Corners area. The state of New Mexico also has a program running to try to attract people back to New Mexico, and personally, I've been successful at having buyers who are just, they fit that category precisely. They're looking to come back to Farmington. They grew up here. They know what a neat community we've got here. All the, you know, all the attractive stuff to do. So they're headed back, and I'm glad to see it.
That's awesome, Barry Digman. And talk a little bit about maybe folks who maybe aren't ready to retire, but we're hearing a lot, as Megan mentioned, about these location-neutral workers who can maybe work from anywhere if they have a connection to the Internet. Are we seeing any of that? I mean, who are these folks that are buying all these houses you're talking about? Are they coming in from out of town, or are they just coming back from college? Or what do we know about these home buyers?
It's across the board. You know, it is people who... You know, and we you guys have seen that stuff on social media about, hey, it's, you know, you've been at home with the family for 6 months. It's time for a bigger house, right? So we see some of that. People are ready to move up. They're ready to make a change within the community. You know, sell their home and move into a larger home as their family grows. We're also seeing the ones who, not quite as much as other places like, you know, Idaho and some places like that, that are, they're really seeing that influx from Silicon Valley, places where, for one, real estate is just so expensive there, but also it's not the most pleasant place to live if you're going to be at home. So, you know, we see some of that coming in. I showed homes, but even before COVID, to some folks, and I always ask what they do, where they're from, all of those kinds of questions. And he said, "Well, I work for Amazon." And I said, "Really? Remote worker for Amazon?" And I said, "Well, is it? Do we have the appropriate internet connection here? Are we fast enough?" And he said, "You'd be amazed. You guys are great. You've got great internet." And I was happy to hear that. So, yeah, we will see more of that. But we really need to get the word out because, obviously, nobody, you know, we're not a top of mind nationally. And we need to be. People need to know about us. And we're working to make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually surprised about the internet remark as well. So our last question for you is, are home offices a big sell these days?
Well, yeah, people are, everybody wants office space. I haven't had a buyer yet that hasn't said, you know, I want 3 bedrooms and office, or 2 bedrooms and office space. So yes, that is at the top of the list right now. Lots of remote working. Lots of folks have discovered it's, you know, it's a great place to live and to work. So yes, we are seeing a demand for homes that, you know, have a space like a third bedroom or a fourth bedroom that can be converted, or one that is built specifically, you know, as an office. You guys know the drill about, you know, a bedroom has to have, you know, like a window and a closet to be called a bedroom, but not so with an office. So yeah, we're seeing that.
Very good. Well, I, for one, am super relieved that the housing market has not just crashed and burned. It's actually a really, I think, positive, optimistic sign that we can recover from this mess. And so, Barry, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, I'm glad to do it anytime. Anybody got any questions? I'm happy to drill down and help anybody out. You don't even have to be a client or a customer. If you've got questions about our local real estate market, give me a call and, you know, we'll talk about it. I'm not going to sit down and have donuts right now. Okay.
Right. There you go. Or if you have a question about Farmington, growing up in Farmington, I think you have some stories about that too.
I've got some great stories, some that will remain untold, okay?
Until the next time, Barry Digman.
Hey, shout out to you guys. You're doing a great job. Appreciate so much what KSJE does for the community.
Well, thank you for that. We appreciate you and all you do as well, Barry. Thanks for coming on. As Megan said, we appreciate it.
You bet. Let's listen to those docs now.
All righty. Very good. Stay safe. That's Barry Digman. He is with Keller Williams Real Estate here in San Juan County, and we appreciate that. And so, I think we're surprised like the market's as healthy as it appears to be.
Yeah. I mean,
real estate, you know?
I breathed a sigh of relief over here.
Right.
There we need all the optimism.
Because of all of your real estate holdings. I can see why you're calmer now, knowing that your investments are well placed.
It is well known, Scott, that the housing market is a helpful tool for gauging where we are economically as a country.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeez.
I know.
Did
but
you
sometimes
take that class?
No, I didn't. But sometimes our market is a little different from the national market, and that's I think why it's always good to talk to local people to get, because you can see these national numbers and everyone says, "Oh, you know, housing's great." But what does it mean locally? Because, you know, we know San Juan County is a little different economy than the country as a whole.
Yeah, it's a little more bust and boom over here.
Yeah. So anyway, we know that the housing market is more of a boom than a bust at the moment. So
we could take all the booms instead of the busts these days.
There you go. So. That's right. Anyway, so.
Numbers?
Numbers. We'll go back to the numbers, right? Yeah. And talk a little bit about where we are at the moment. And we just talked a little bit about testing. And so we'll talk to about the Johns Hopkins numbers that I know you follow. Right there.
Like a hawk.
There they are.
Okay. So U.S. confirmed cases are now at 10,403,737. U.S. confirmed deaths are now at 241,809.
Right. So that's where we are.
9/11 a day.
We're still seeing almost record cases, right, coming in across the country.
Yeah.
And so that's where we are. We are still ahead of, India, Brazil, and France are the next major countries that have the large amount of cases like we do. But again, we are leading the pack. And you can see that other graph in the lower right corner about how that curve is heading back up.
Yeah.
And it is not flattened
The
yet.
Eastern side of the United States is really, Florida is almost entirely red.
Right. But so. I think a lot of that's population too. I mean, not to say, from that graph that we're showing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of densely populated.
Yeah, like Mexico City also struggling. Yeah.
Right.
It's one of the most populous cities in the world. So,
there you go.
Yeah.
So that's Johns Hopkins. Let's look locally again. From yesterday, 1,500 cases in the state. I think that's a new record, unfortunately. Yeah. We're now at 59,034 total cases in New Mexico. Of that, San Juan County had 56 new cases, which is, again, a big number for us locally, 4,254 cases here, 14 deaths across the state for a total now over 1,000. And it wasn't too long ago we were talking just about hitting that kind of grim milestone of 1,000 deaths. Now we're at 1,158. No new deaths in San Juan County. We are grateful for that, of course, but we're still at 206. And there were 245 more recoveries reported yesterday for a total now of 23,981.
We always want to celebrate that.
We do. And those are great numbers, again, to be able to share with you. Moving on to some of the other news stories we put on KSJE.com. You can see the daily numbers there. And also the Navajo Nation numbers. They had 98 new cases yesterday. Again, higher numbers for them than we have seen. One additional death. The total number of cases now in the Navajo Nation is 12,818. And 596 deaths across the Navajo Nation as well. And so there are now 7,828 recoveries on the Navajo Nation. And the other story I wanted to make a mention of is, again, you can see it there on the screen, that the San Regional Medical Center, because of the increase in cases, has reinstituted their visitor restrictions to the hospital. So they're not allowing folks to come to the hospital under most circumstances. There are exceptions. Yeah. And so it's always good to just be clear about that. They wanted to be clear, too, that, you know, if you're giving birth, you can have that support person while you're doing that.
Right.
You don't have to be there by yourself.
Right.
So I think that's important. And there are other exceptions, too.
End of life is
right.
an exception.
You would know about that, certainly, because you do a lot of those visitations.
Yes.
And talk to those folks. So, anyways, but yeah. But that's what's going on at the hospital, and I think it's with good reason, obviously, because they want to keep their staff safe, their other patients safe, and all those different things. So so that's what's up. And again, more details are on our website, ksje.com/news, to read more on these stories that we're sharing with you this morning. So those are some of the numbers. The other thing I thought would be helpful to share as this new watch list, we talked about that on Monday's program from the Environment Department, and that, of course, is the number of cases being reported at a local business or entity. If there are more than four more within a two-week period, they have to shut down for 14 days. We've seen that now with the Walmart on West Main Street. And this is the watch list from updated yesterday afternoon. The West Main Street Walmart had 7 mm-hmm. COVID positive cases. The other places on this list now this week, and they could fall off if they get no more cases. So we're hopeful for that. City of Farmington has 2 cases. And thank you, computer, for showing me that in the middle of the show. Appreciate that very much. City of Farmington, as I mentioned, had 2 cases. Treadworks has 2 positive cases. And the Walmart on East Main Street has 3 cases.
Yeah.
So we're watching.
And we so are watching.
And so is the state.
The watch list is watching.
Yes. But I share that just to, again, of transparency. I think the state should be commended for being transparent and sharing these numbers with the audience and with the residents of the state. But I think, too, you know, a lot of folks are saying, oh, my gosh, we're going to get shut down again. We're going back into lockdown. And I think this is maybe a way to avoid locking everything down and being more specific, right? So if you've got a problem at one particular business, we lock them down. We close them so it doesn't spread from that area instead of locking down the whole county or the whole state or whatever. And I think that's maybe a better solution, although I'm not a politician, I'm not a policy person, but I think it's a better solution than locking down or putting restrictions across even San Juan County or even the whole state again, if you can just pinpoint some of these locations. And they're doing this in San Juan County and every county in the state, this watch list. So there's my 2 cents.
That's good.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So there you go.
On all fronts.
Okay. So anyway, let's talk to our doctors, because I know we always enjoy doing that. This news about the vaccine, we talked about that on Monday as well. Mm-hmm. Pfizer saying that their vaccine, their trials, it came back at 90% efficacy. And so that was, everybody's pretty amazed about that.
Yeah, and it would be groundbreaking technology. It's the only vaccine to use the mRNA. Style. Right. So it's just also a huge technological advance that should be celebrated.
And quick and fast. Yeah. I mean, that's the quickest vaccine development ever. So
yeah, anyway. Makes you wonder why the FDA takes so long usually.
Well, let's give a listen to our doctors and hear what they have to say. Here we go.
Joining us now are two of our favorite guests, I think, Dr. Aaron Philpott and Dr. Brad Greenbird from San Juan Regional Medical Center, who have given generously of their time and expertise since this whole debacle began. So
yeah, almost
again,
40 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. 3 decades
seems
ago.
Like it.
Thanks,
right.
guys.
Anyway,
thanks
welcome.
For joining us, guys.
Welcome, doctors.
Thank you so much for having us.
Good to have you on the program, and I guess the biggest news would be, and why we thought it'd be great to talk to both of you, is about this news from Pfizer earlier in the week about their vaccine, and that they have gotten their trials back, and it shows about 90% efficacy, and so that seems to be a big deal and very important note for a lot of folks. And so, doctors, I'll let you decide who wants to go first. Maybe Dr. Philpott can go first to kind of explain why this is such a big deal.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Yes, we were very excited, or I was very excited to wake up to that news. I think the first thing I did was text Dr. Greenbird and Dr. Underwood, our CMO, and a few others about this excitement, because we have so very little good news lately. I think, you know, it is important to really highlight that we don't have all the information yet, but I think really even preliminarily, this is incredible. So as you all probably know, this vaccine is currently undergoing a phase 3 trial. Pfizer is the drug company that's producing it. The platform is a new platform. No other previous vaccines have been built the same way. It's an mRNA platform. And the trial was about 40,000 people. I think it was exactly 43,500 some people who have since enrolled. And then around 39,000 have received their second dose to date. The FDA outlined some criteria for all the different phase 3 trials and companies to get sort of some preliminary information. And they have even more than what the FDA set forth initially. This was looking at 94 COVID cases in the study, And, you know, they don't provide a lot of details of what exactly those cases were and how many were in the vaccine group and how many were in the placebo group. But we figure based on that number of cases, there's probably nine or fewer who have actually been infected with COVID in the vaccine group, given they're reporting this 90% efficacy. So really, it's great news. The FDA said at least 50% efficacy, and childhood vaccine. I mean, this is even if it's not quite 90, the fact that we're just seeing this preliminarily is really promising. We still don't have any data on severe illness or death, so we'll look out for that. But I think the safety profile is looking very promising as far as what we have to date. So more to come soon, hopefully, but it's looking good.
Very good. Dr. Greenberg, and I would assume you feel the same way?
Well, I think that this is really kind of an interesting moment. The fact is that there, like Dr. Philpott said, there are no other vaccines that are based upon this particular kind of platform. So it is exciting. I mean, there are some potential advantages to this platform from a safety perspective. mRNA is not infectious. It doesn't integrate into your own genome. There's no risk of infection. There's no risk of what they call insertional mutagenesis, or changing your DNA that way. And it's rapidly degraded by normal cellular processes. You know, the production of the vaccine is scalable, so you can engineer production facilities to do large scale production, which is very good. We know that it's capable of generating humoral and cellular immunity, so antibodies and cells that can fight. The mRNA that's presented as the target. And, there are some challenges, though. I mean, the challenge is this is one of those, we talked a little bit about a super cold supply chain. This is the vaccine does require storage at like negative 70 degrees Celsius. It does have a period of time after which it can be thawed, in which it has to be used. And we're working really hard on trying to make sure that we, in the Four Corners region, are actually able to receive the vaccine and then be able to distribute it effectively. This is a wait and see. I'm really glad to see from a safety perspective. There's tens of thousands of people that have already received this, and we will have to follow this very closely. I agree. Very promising. I think it made everyone sort of happy and a little bit relieved. But again, like, we have to make sure that we all remember that these vaccines, they're new. And so let's not think of each or every one of these as a panacea. Let's take the good news. Let's move forward with it. But let's also not take our eyes off of the current challenge and the obligations we have to try to mitigate the disease. And again, this is a flashback to the spring, but we need to flatten the curve.
Right. And so what you're also saying is it's time for us to buy stock in dry ice now. Buyer's market.
Yes.
Okay.
If there's such a thing as stock in dry ice.
I don't know, but I'm going to research it now.
Now it's an investment show. Now, okay, thanks, Megan.
Sorry. Okay.
Anyway,
getting back to seriousness. So let's dream big and assume that this pans out and that this is a vaccine that we can use. How do you roll these things out, and how many people have to get vaccinated before herd immunity takes effect? How long does that usually happen after a new vaccine comes out? Can you guys speak to that?
Yeah, so I think I believe it's the FDA there. I've looked at this, but it's not coming to my mind right away. Maybe Dr. Greenberg can fill in around this. But there's different phases that have been set up, basically targeting the different populations on how it will be rolled out. Given it's a series of vaccines, most of these are the Pfizer as well as the Moderna anyway, which are both mRNA and mRNA platforms. And they are 21 days from the first vaccine for Pfizer and then 28 for the Moderna. And then for Pfizer, their study is looking at people having immunity 7 days after the last vaccine. So it's going to take a long time to roll this out, given the supply chain issues that Dr. Greenberg was just discussing, needing to be kept cool, and how we're going to do that in a methodical way. The production, I think there's, I want to say 50 million, I think I have that number right, vaccines that are ready to go or will soon be ready to go from Pfizer worldwide. So you can imagine how long it's going to take to really vaccinate our population based on the series and based on the supply chain and many, many other factors. But I think that aside, looking at what we need for herd immunity to prevent transmission from person to person with COVID-19, it's based on the R-naught, which we talked about early on. So like measles is a highly contagious respiratory virus. So a large portion of the population has to be vaccinated with a high efficacy vaccine to be effective in preventing transmission. And we see those occasional outbreaks among people with lower vaccine rates or populations with lower vaccine rates. Like there's an island up near Washington that many of the people choose not to vaccinate. So, you know, you have a big population at risk there. But for COVID, the R-naught is 2 to 3 or so. So if you do the math, that means that about 2/3 of the population will need to be immune to prevent ready spread. So once 2/3 of our population is vaccinated, then I think in theory we would have, you know, a reduction in spread and could get back to some semblance of normal. There's a lot of unknowns surrounding this, though, right? Because we still don't know the longevity of the immune protection you're going to get from this vaccine. We're seeing waning antibody responses, you know, after 3 months, similar to other viruses. But so many, many factors to consider when talking about herd immunity. But I think the notion that we can get herd immunity by just all of us getting infected, it doesn't fit. So the vaccine is going to get us where we need to, hopefully will get us where we need to go as far as getting us back to normal in the future. Anything else on that, Dr. Greenberg?
Well, I think that there actually is a pretty great article published just less than a week ago in The Lancet about the challenges about creating herd immunity for COVID-19. And considerations about what happens with mass vaccination. So a lot of the things that you touched on really are just it. Like if you were to have like the perfect vaccine, 100% efficacy, which gives lifelong protection, you need, you know, you still need roughly 2/3 to get the immunity. Now, if you add in variability, like the vaccine's 50% efficacious or the immune response that's created doesn't last as long, then everything becomes much more convoluted. So, you know, the idea that what we like to do is we like to create herd immunity, but it does look like even in the best possible scenario, when you're looking at the timeline and the logistics associated with it, you're looking at 12 to 24 months, even the best case scenario, to achieve some degree of herd immunity, so to speak, in the sense that we refer to herd immunity for vaccination campaigns. I agree strongly the idea that we're going to achieve herd immunity through infection, especially with variations in immune response and whatnot, is really not something that lends itself very well to public policy. I think using this tool that we have, hopefully, and it works really well with this vaccine, we need to give it some time. We have considerable logistic challenges. Some folks have referred to the first challenge, the first like Manhattan Project of basically getting the vaccine invented, efficacious, and tested. Folks have also referred to a entirely second Manhattan Project, which is simply the distribution and provision of the vaccine to the entire population. It's sort of that complicated. It is very challenging to figure out how to do it, very challenging, and there's some ethical challenges about who gets it and how fast those folks get it, and there are folks working on all of these different elements of this specific contingency, and we would like to do it as fast as possible, but this is a many months to years proposition to really achieve this herd immunity, even with satisfactory distribution and a good efficacious vaccine.
Great. Thank you guys for providing so much insight and info to us. And speaking of articles and insight and info, Dr. Philpott, you wrote a pretty poignant piece. Scott and I both read it, and we both enjoyed it. And we know it's your opinion and not representative of the hospital necessarily, but if you could speak more about that on air, we'd love to hear you.
Sure. Yeah, thanks so much, Scott and Megan. I appreciate that. It is something that I wrote and I've written periodically throughout the whole pandemic about just different experiences and feelings. I think it's hard for doctors to sort of present their feelings. I think we've all kind of undergone such, trauma essentially, and we're expected to just sort of soldier on, so to speak. And I think really, there have been a lot of challenges along the way, and I've been really appreciative and amazed by sort of this outpouring of support and how it really resonates with so many other physicians and healthcare workers, and that even though it took a little bit of courage to share some feelings, that really means a lot to me, and I'm glad that it could provide people with some insight, because I think we are kind of all in our chasms and our silos and just trying to get through all of this. And, there's not always a right answer to these choices we make in going out or doing riskier things or traveling or seeing family. And I think that's really challenging for different families and relationships. And so I think, I was just glad to have the support and know that so many people have shared similar experiences and feelings on many different levels of different things that I guess I brought up and talked about in that.
Absolutely. Vulnerability breeds more empathy. What is the website that people can go to read that piece?
It's on KevinMD. I think it's kevinmd.com, but it's, if you just Google it, KevinMD, and I think it's called A Physician on the Precipice.
Right. Very good. Well, and thank you for, again, reminding all of us about the humanity that exists with our frontline folks in the medical field who are dealing with these things each and every day. Dr. Greenberg, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the upcoming holiday season. I know our state health officials are reminding us to limit our gatherings and not to travel to over the river and through the woods and all those places to see people.
Especially not grandma's house.
No, don't
not
go to
now.
Grandma's house.
Yeah.
But I know it just bears repeating, I think, that this is the way to, again, flatten the curve, as you said. And, as we certainly are looking forward to this vaccine, as you mentioned, it's still months, if not weeks away. And we still need to be mindful that this virus is nonstop, and it is still out there, and it's still very, very infectious, correct?
That's absolutely correct. And, I have to say that the holiday season and thinking about how to try to mitigate the spread of the virus, those two things, they don't usually go together. It's very challenging here because we have, I think everyone really appreciates the time and the togetherness that the holiday season brings. Lots of opportunity for folks to travel and to usually, on a normal year, spend lots of time with friends and family. Now, I do think that we really need to think, and I know that the governor and also the editorial board of the Albuquerque Journal and a number of other folks have come out to really express substantial concern about these normal kind of patterns and how 2020, in this, as with everything else, is not a normal year. And I think that, there really are attendant risks. We see them all the time when we do reviews of travel and case investigations of small family gatherings being a particularly challenging but very frequent area of infection and transmission of COVID-19. So I think that this year, I would I would suggest that everyone really think very hard about what they should do this holiday season. Are there alternative ways of both sharing the holiday season and the feeling of togetherness that doesn't necessarily involve, you know, being in the same place in the same room? You know, I think that, and those are really challenging things. And I'm not saying that this is what anyone wants, but I do think it is important for all of us to really think about how we're going to get through this pandemic together and how we can minimize the spread. And part of that is trying to think through and minimize any related travel or interactions with folks that are not in your usual bubble, so to speak. You know, so this is challenging. There's no good answers. But I think that looking at video conferencing, looking at telephone calls, and trying to think about other good ways to experience the holiday season and celebrate together without necessarily being in the same place are things that I hope every individual family can think about. Just understand that, you know, we're all in this together. And, you know, if we really have an obligation, you know, each of us to think about that, to try to minimize the spread of COVID-19. We all want our way out of this. But I would implore everyone not to just ignore the advisories and the precautions that everyone is suggesting. Think about what you can do, and really think about and consider altering your plans to reflect the increased dangers of transmission of COVID-19. And hopefully with all this, we'll be done with it and never have to relive another 2020.
Yeah. Amen to that.
From your lips.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Dr. Greenberg and Dr. Philpott, as always, it's a pleasure. We look forward to it anytime you guys are on, and I know our community appreciates greatly all of the expert knowledge, advice, and teaching you can give. So thanks again, guys.
Thanks so much, Scott and Megan.
Thank you both.
Thanks so much for having us.
You are welcome. Thank you. That is Dr. Brad Greenberg and Dr. Aaron Philpott from San Juan Regional Medical Center joining us on our COVID-19 Community Information Program. And that will wrap up our program for today, everyone. Thank you for joining us. And Megan, thank you for being here as well. Megan? Oh, like a cartoon character, she just took off. Well, look at that. All right. Well, we'll be back on Monday, everybody. So stay safe and stay well and enjoy your weekend. And we'll be back Monday, of course, here on KSJE. Bye-bye. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.